Bunker with Paul Andrews.
And a warm hello from me, Jules Serkin, on the Business Bunker show. We've got a cracking show for you here in Kent, where we're based, in Ashford. And as you know, or may have heard on the Twitter, the fabulous Paul Andrews, who's the owner of Channel Radio, nonetheless, you can find him on at VanillaWeb on the Twitter. Why not ruin his holiday by tweeting him for the next 2 hours? I'm sure he'll really relish that. But he is away. He's your usual host. And I'm normally the co-presenter, the lowly co-presenter that does everything, makes tea, all that sort of thing. So we've got a fantastic show for you. I've hauled in Gavin Serkin, who's my co-host, to take over from the co-hosting I normally do. Hello, Gavin.
Hi.
So Gavin is an author. His book Frontier was acclaimed as a must read by the Financial Times. And no, he's not my brother, before you ask.
Nor her dad.
Nor my father. I'd like to thank our sponsor of the Business Bunker show, which is I'm In My Zone. And we've got an exciting, really exciting global Business Bunker as we took over the studio from Paul Andrews. As you know, we're often very, very Kentish. We love our Kent businesses. But Gavin and I, with New Markets Media and Intelligence, have been collaborating all over the world using our Kentish business contacts. And so we thought this was the ideal opportunity to tell you all about it. So we've got special guests calling in at unearthly hours from across the time zones. We have New Zealand. So I reckon he's going to be having his Horlicks and getting ready for bed. It will be about midnight there. And then from Lagos, on our time zone, and London, of course. But we're not forgetting our roots, because in the studio, a little bit less further to travel, we've got, joining Gavin Serkin and myself, two Kent businesses with a little touch of French in the mix. And I'll let you guess which is which. So first of all, hello to Monsieur Ken Lloyd.
Bonjour. Good to be with you, John.
Ken is a graphic designer who lives in the beautiful hamlet of Herne in Kent, not far from Herne Bay. He's a veteran of some of the UK's most iconic marketing campaigns. He's been part of the top London advertising agencies, including Collett, Dickinson and Pierce, and Young and Rubicon. And Ken Lloyd's recent projects range from design work for Nigeria's pharmaceutical industry to high-end super yacht makers and leading global communications companies. He's got a wealth of first-hand experience handling all aspects of the design and pre-press chain. And Ken brings valuable expertise in all areas of design and print. Thank you and welcome, Ken, for coming in. And Gavin and I've worked with Ken for 150 years on various projects, brochures, prospectuses, you name it, photography. We've gotten a few scrapes along the way, haven't we, Ken?
We certainly have, yeah. You don't want to hear about those today.
No, we want to hear about the positive stuff. And flanking Ken, we have Francois Rainier. Yeah. He's bonjour. He is the CEO of Acacia, which is a specialist branding consultancy working internationally. And on the phone, on the blower later on, we've got Stephen Holden. He's the CEO of Copley Fund Research. And he's also the founder of Copley Fund Research. And they scan the world's biggest investors for trends. And also calling in, we've got Nikiru Balonwu of African Women on Board. You can find them on AWB Africa. Please tweet them and please follow them, because they're doing dynamic stuff there for not just African women, for world women. And also James Major, who's the manager, who's the manager.
It's okay, she does call me Javin sometimes.
So. It's the G's and the J's. It's actually, I've been practicing his name wrongly until I discovered from his PR. I thought I'd better ask his PR last night about 10 o'clock at night, as you do. And he put me right. So I blame the husband who gave me all the details. But James Mager is the manager for responsible investing for Actis in London, but obviously global. And you can find them on the Twitter, and please tweet them on Actis LLP. And they'll hear you if you tweet them. So James is going to be discussing how to assess the impact of your business or investments on society and the planet. So if you use the, as usual, the Bee Bunker hashtag, tweet questions to me at Jules Serkin or at G Serkin. But for now, Ken and Francoise. Do I say the S on the end for a man, Francois?
It's S on Francois.
Okay. Producer, can you turn up my headphones for me, please? Thank you. I've got the lovely Craig Avery, the producer, who's also a presenter on Channel Radio. And we've been fiddling with the knobs. We're not allowed to tail Paul Andrews, but we did actually fiddle. You're not allowed to, but we did. But Ken and Francois. Francois?
Francois. You don't say
Francois. S, so for a woman, I would say?
You would say S-E-S.
Merci. Tell us, you guys, before we go on to our phone guests, how does doing biz in Africa and your other continents that you've worked with differ? And what kind of hurdles did you cross, if any, to get started globally? Let's ask Ken first.
Yeah. I have to go back about 25 years, I guess, to when I first started working with Client Africa. And it was a question for me of really being in the right place at the right time. And it started off when we took our car to the garage down the end of the road to get it serviced, and I met the manager. We got friendly, and he was a car nut like me and invited me to go to the British Grand Prix at Silverstone.
Oh, nice.
Which was nice. Yes. So I went. And he said, oh, by the way, my brother's coming over from Africa, from Nigeria, in fact. And he did, and we met. And had a chat, and this was a good friend of mine now, Brian Vokes. Brian, what do you do for a living? And he said, yeah, work in Lagos. I work for Welcome Nigeria, pharmaceutical company. And I had a quick chat, and Ken, what do you do? I'm a graphic designer. I've just left London. I'm working freelance now. And he said, yeah, it'd be nice to work together one day. And I said, yeah, it would. Didn't think any more of it. And we had a good weekend at the Grand Prix, and time went by. But a year later, I had a phone call from Brian, and he said, Ken, do you fancy doing some work for us? So I said, I'd love to. What do you want? He said, well, we need everything, absolutely everything. And what had happened was Welcome Nigeria had decided to pull out of Nigeria, in fact, and they did a pulling out deal, really, with my friend Brian. And with his management team, they took over the facility that Welcome were leaving and rebranded it as SKG Pharma. And they basically needed everything doing, from creating the branding, the logo, packaging. And that's where my work started. So it was really being in the right place. Because in those days, this was a long while ago, we had no internet, no email to help us. Everything was fax, phone, or courier.
Fax, do you remember? Courier?
Do you remember the fax?
What did we ever do?
Jules, it was a nightmare. It really was. And the phone lines, I think every third word would cut out of a phone conversation. But, you know, we did it. And we clicked straight away. And they, like, really, I found all my clients in Africa, they're great to work with. They have always given me really good, full written briefs. They explain exactly what they want. And now, with what we're doing, they can, they always come back to me quickly. They always make good decisions. And so the distance, in fact, was what I'm building up to, doesn't really make any difference with communications these days.
Well, nowadays, much, much easier. We've got Skype. I mean, we have conference calls and all that. Yeah. I know we did a hairy conference call with you recently with one of our clients.
We did.
And it was, a 4-5-way conference, yeah. And it just happens. It's great, you know. Francois, I'm making you feminine. I'm so sorry. You're very macho. Tell us a little bit about your tribulations or trials, if any, of working abroad, or is it all mainstreaming, smooth streaming?
Yeah, I've been quite lucky because for my career, I've been fortunate enough to work all over Europe, in Germany, in Switzerland, in Belgium, and through personal connection, explored as well the African market. And obviously, I'm not a pioneer or veteran testimony we just heard, and I think now it's easier than before, the functioning technology, because I don't think I'd know to send a fax these days. I wouldn't even know to operate a fax machine. But I think my experience of African businesses is that personal relationship with the world is not as important in business, but in the African market, even more so. I mean, you know, you really have to do very hard to be on the ground, to meet people, to keep relationships strong. And it's a very open market, yeah? Maybe in certain European countries, the market is a bit mature and a bit, you know, overcrowded. In Africa is really a land of opportunity for ambitious businesses. And I think, you know, if you make the effort to go there, make a connection and start a relationship, it pays dividend long term. I mean, as you just heard, you know, once you've got a good relationship, it can last for decades.
And they're very important, and also possibly respecting the cultures of different companies. Gavin, you've been working, well, for 15, 20 years with Bloomberg as global head of emerging markets. How? What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I was just thinking when Francois was talking, because we worked together on a project in Côte d'Ivoire, and you think that's, you know, French-speaking country, so, you know, we worked on translating a newsletter and a press release into French, and you realize the idiosyncrasies of, you know, which Francois was aware of, and I completely wasn't. You know, I thought we'd go for French, and you know, Paris French is not the same as Côte d'Ivoire French, which is going to be different from French in another French speaking country. And you, it is a matter of really knowing locally what expected. You know, I think it, you know, to borrow the adage of think globally, act locally, it's also a matter of think globally, kind of price locally, you know, in that you need to also match your services with what different companies can afford, you know, particularly when you're working in Africa or South Asia. You know, it's aligning your services and being smart about how you approach business to take on local people to engage locally.
I know when we did a translation recently, the difference in the language, you know, we had a fabulous translation in proper plain Parisian, you know, correct Parisian. But with one of our clients, it had to be altered quite a bit for the, you know, for the local dialect almost. So that must have been a tough job, Francois.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting job in the way that, you know, French is speaking a different way through the world. For example, people in Quebec will speak French quite differently from people in France.
Yeah.
Also, we use the same language. We might use turn of phrase, which, you know, quite surprising to a native French person. And in Africa, even more so.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's many African, French-speaking African countries, but they each have their own version of French, which sometimes quite differ. And as you know, sometimes one word can change the entire meaning of a sentence. So we work very closely with Youssef and Gavin on the translation for this project, because it was quite important press release. So it has to work on the local market, but at the same time, it was going to be seen internationally by other French speakers. So finding the right balance between having something which makes sense for the local market, which at the same time will not be as interpretive internationally, was important. And that's why I think we did quite a few versions, and it was a labor of love, really. Yeah.
It was great, and I know that even with Gavin, you know, working with a lot of American clients and from Bloomberg, you know, sometimes I'll catch him with the way he's writing, that his spelling is an American spelling rather than English, and of course Ken will have had that with the when he's doing the brochures, you know, and we're doing the stuff. But I love the way that Francois has stepped up to the mark with the translations there. And we're going to play a little tune to reflect that. So here's a little bit of Stepping Out, because we have been with Joe Jackson. Joe Jackson stepping out, because we are stepping out now here on the Business Bunker Show. You can use the hashtag to tweet us at Jules Serkin, at G Serkin. Use the hashtag B Bunker. And we have now on the line from New Zealand, and probably having a little Horlicks ready for bed, we think, it's Stephen Holden. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Jules.
Hello.
I'm indeed having my Horlicks.
And
it's midnight over here.
Now, Stephen is the, thank you so much for staying up for us. Stephen is the CEO of Copley Funding. And Gavin is going to, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and then Gavin Serkin is going to take over. But I wanted to ask you, Stephen, how you moved from being a city trader at Morgan Stanley to starting your own company and moving out to that beautiful New Zealand country.
Yeah, well, it was a combination of a number of things, I suppose, and it started with an idea and something that I thought addressed the gap in the market, certainly in terms of what I wanted to see in terms of the data and fund flow information. And it also combined with the fact that I'd been in the city for 15 years and wanted a change of pace of life. I was getting a bit tired of having to get in the office at 6 a.m. and having to leave at 7 at night, things like that. And then on the family side, we just had two kids, two boys, and we're living in Hong Kong, and I wanted to, you know, kind of set up our lives somewhere else. And my wife's a Kiwi, so
that's quite handy then, really.
Yeah. It helped, didn't it? Yeah. I don't think I'd have come all this way otherwise. but yes, so we had somewhere to move to, if you like.
And whereabouts do you live in New Zealand?
I live on an island off Auckland called Waiheke Island, which is quite a nice
sounds
place. It's
absolutely
got wineries and beaches.
Sounds absolutely gorgeous. And I do a food show in my normal life, which is Scoff and Quaff. So any beautiful wines, just put them through to me. And another question for you, Stephen. Tell us what Copley's all about. Yeah, I know that Gavin will tell me about the data and stuff, but just tell us a little bit about Copley and what you're doing there.
Sure. So the research I do at Copley is really aimed for investment professionals, and my kind of client target base are hedge fund managers or long-only managers, folks who work in banks and family offices. And it's about providing some meaningful data on positioning and sentiment and performance within a specific market. So I gather holdings data from groups of funds who have the same regional focus. So I started out in emerging markets, so that was the product I launched with, and I analysed the holdings of 190 or so global emerging market equity funds. And so it's quite a data-heavy process, and it's about aggregating those holdings together to draw conclusions on a macro level about where people are investing. So in emerging markets, for example, I could think, well, how many folks are invested in China and what's their weight in China and how's that changing over time? And then I drill down to the micro level to see which stocks people are investing in, which funds are investing in those stocks. And so it gives people a very good understanding of the market and where it sits in terms of positioning.
So Steve, Copley Fund Research has all this huge amount of data from all these hundreds of funds, billions of our dollars that are being invested. What are you seeing? You know, what trends are out there that are telling you how investors are viewing the world right now?
It's interesting, and we'll talk about the global product that I do, which looks at 250 global managers, and these are managers that can invest anywhere in the world, and it's usually headed by the US, that's the biggest stock market in the world, and then you have the UK and Japan and the Eurozone countries following. And an interesting stat hit this month in terms of UK allocations. So UK allocations among global funds hit an 8-year low this month, and possibly longer. My data starts at 2011, and it's the lowest that I've ever seen it, and it's just dipped below 8% for the first time. And to put that into context, back in 2011 and 12, that was as high as 11.5%. So in essence, as you're talking about, you know, investing in your own money, every time you invest in a global fund, you're probably going to be investing less in the UK than you were 7 or 8 years ago. So that's a key point. And I guess to note on that, a lot of that effect has been down to the weakening pound. So it's effectively your UK assets are devalued when the sterling gets weakened, and so it takes a lower proportion of your global portfolio. So it's been a, I guess, Brexit-led race to this level, and it'll be interesting to see what happens from here.
So it's partly about the, or predominantly, as you say, about the weakening pound. But do you feel from, you know, I know you get the data and you talk to some of these fund managers. Do you feel like it's reflected in their sentiment as well? Or is it really just a lock barrel move to reduce UK because of pound weakness?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that it's not by any means, you know, investors running around panicking and closing UK exposure at all. 98% of the managers in my analysis have UK exposure, but it's definitely been some structural shift in UK allocations over the past 5 years or so, where if you look back towards 2012 and those kind of dates, the most widely held UK stocks were stocks like Vodafone, HSBC, and even Tesco, so some domestic plays there. But over time, investors have really reduced or closed exposures in these companies. So what's left are investor overweights in some of the big UK consumer staples companies, such as Diageo, Unilever, and Reckitt Benckiser, who are big consumer names, multinational companies, selling to, you know, even emerging market economies. And they're very attractive to global managers at the moment. And they're the key big UK overweights.
And is UK the biggest pull out by investors, or are they exiting other countries in this kind of way?
Not as much. I mean, Japan seeing something of an exodus, but not on the same level. And what you tend to see in among global managers is that they run fairly concentrated portfolios. So you see some more interesting things perhaps on an industry level or a stock level. And things like tobacco stocks, and BATS is included in that, British American Tobacco, are seeing really quite a large exodus from global managers, especially in this world of ESG and responsible investing. Tobacco, the industry group itself, is in massive decline. So you're seeing managers actually just quitting the sector. They don't want to be associated with those kind of companies. And on a stock level, Apple and Facebook are names that global investors have tended to shy away from in recent times. So you think of Apple, the biggest company in the world, or one of them. That's seen as a large underweight among global investors. Again, funds not as bullish on that name as maybe people might think they are. And that too goes for Facebook.
Mm. And so keeping within the UK, which you know, you mentioned Vodafone and HSBC, for example, as some of the bellwethers that are really suffering. Are there companies that are weathering this a bit better?
It's really the consumer names. The UK is the big overweight in the UK is consumers, and it's the consumer staples name. So it's the names that weather a storm the best, I guess, especially given these markets. People like Unilever are selling their goods all over the world and to big growing markets like India and China. They're a resilient stock. They run very well. They've got strong management team. You almost get that emerging market exposure without having to invest in an emerging market company, if you like. So they're the bellwethers in the UK at the moment, by far.
Mm. Okay, so maybe a message to Boris for out there in what global investors are what their attitude is towards the UK right now. But where are investors heading? Where are the hot places out there?
So there's a few. If you can imagine that the data set that I have is big, and there's lots of places where investors are starting to ramp up allocations, and Dutch stocks and Netherlands stocks are one of them. They're actually hitting an all-time high at the moment, but it's a much smaller allocation than the UK. It's around 2.5%. But it's really, again, concentrated in three or four stocks, and two of those are consumer staples names again. So the Unilever Dutch listing and Heineken, as we all know, a good big brewery company.
Know them well.
Globally. And secondly, two semiconductor companies, ASML and NXP Semiconductors, both seeing really strong buying from global managers. And this is associated with the themes of chips, microchips, in terms of automated driving and the Internet of Things, all these kind of things which make semiconductors attractive at the moment. It's definitely been parked in those two companies. So, you know, funds like JP Morgan, Artemis, Fidelity, all buying into NXP Semiconductors, even over the last 6 months. So that's certainly a name to look out for.
Mm-hmm. And outside of Europe, Netherlands maybe is the hot spot in Europe right now. What about elsewhere?
So China financials and this kind of goes for emerging funds as well as global funds, are seeing really strong momentum and growing ownership among fund managers. And it's specifically in China insurance stocks. So there's a couple of big names, AIA and Ping An Insurance, that managers are piling into. I mean, if you can imagine the Chinese population, there's clearly a big opportunity to sell insurance as that population becomes more wealthy and grows. So those are two strong names and big overweights in emerging market and global portfolios.
So, which is interesting because, you know, you think about the trade war and how, you know, the focus of the media is how this is America trying to level the playing field and the damage that it's causing to the Chinese economy. But, you know, global investors maybe are seeing things a bit differently if they're putting money into China right now.
Well, completely. And I guess these names are more domestic than others as well. So in terms of they're not exporting anything to the US on that level. So I think that there's an interest. And just the pure growth story of these stocks is very attractive. And again, they're very well-run names listed in Hong Kong as well as China. So it's just it's every month we see more funds getting exposed to these two stocks. It's quite interesting. And other areas I thought are worth mentioning are life sciences, stocks such as Illumina and Lonza Group. You probably may not be that aware of them, but you know, stocks that are looking to take advantage of this new age science of genetics and things like that. More and more big fund managers, people like Baillie Gifford, are buying into names like Illumina for, you know, kind of long-term gains. I think that's quite an interesting area. Still small, but noticeably picking up. It didn't really exist 5 or 10 years ago, so that's an interesting one.
Yeah, and sorry, Steve, on Illumina, just explain a bit about what they do and maybe what the context is for this emerging sector in this kind of field of life sciences.
I mean, I wish I was an expert, Gavin. I don't know too much about it. I know that they do. It's about genetics and then the gene code and things like that, right. Selling it.
Yeah, all of us trying to find who our ancestors are and giving our saliva samples.
Yeah, so something like that, yeah. But, I mean, again, they're kind of surprisingly huge businesses. I've looked them up a few weeks ago. They're incredibly interesting stuff that you would hardly believe when you sat at your desk, you know, doing a bit of financial analysis. So it's a little way above my head.
Yeah.
But imagine. Clearly, you know, just an area of interest for these guys. You know, it's fascinating stuff for me. Huh. More kind of, I guess, names you'd be familiar with, which, again, constantly seeing more and more investor flow, are Microsoft in the US, which obviously I mentioned Apple is going the other way. Mm. Microsoft is definitely more attractive of the two from an investor perspective. And Visa is now, I think it's the biggest overweight among global investors, Visa, you know, the credit card company.
Yeah.
I'm just seeing more and more and more funds buying into these two stocks. It's like a straight horizontal, a 45-degree line of more and more funds piling in. So it's I thought it was interesting, the Microsoft-Apple divide, whereas personally I would think, Apple's the, you know, more attractive company because I own an iPhone. But in fact, Microsoft's business case seems to be more compelling at the moment.
Right. And Visa is also a little bit surprising when you think about the trends of mobile money and people not using the traditional financial sector quite so much. But I guess Visa is fairly well tapped into those different, you know, thinking of remittances going electronic and, you know, mobile money, particularly in the developing world. But also, you know, we've all got our mobile wallets now. Is Visa particularly well ingrained in those?
I think you're right. I think it's well placed for that. It's almost a technology company from that perspective. Mm. So it's well placed to take advantage of this, you know, the move to, you know, kind of cashless society. And obviously there's growth there in emerging economies as well. So MasterCard as well is seeing it, but Visa appears to be the one that's winning that particular battle.
Just thinking about the news flow, you know, this morning we heard about the Chinese government, or I should say the Chinese Central Bank, devaluing the yuan or the renminbi. You know, every day we're seeing a different wave of the trade war, and, you know, this is causing a lot of flux for markets. Markets crashed fell significantly on that news. How are you seeing this in terms of flows? Are you seeing more volatility? Are you seeing fund managers more jolty pulling money in, putting it in different areas, and then changing 180 degrees. Have you seen volatility pick up?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've been looking for themes to kind of suggest funds are, I guess, positioning themselves more defensively. And there's evidence of some of that. As I mentioned already, kind of consumer staples names are in vogue, whereas consumer discretionary names manages to building up a larger underweight. So it's kind of evidence that the cycle is turning, but it's not aggressive. It's not something that you kind of really go, wow, look at this. It's all quite nuanced at the moment. So I don't think it's quite touched there. Areas of interest that kind of hint at the trade war, I guess, taking effect as managers increasing their holdings in Vietnam as the kind of secondary, you know, taking over some of that production from China. Vietnam allocations they hit all-time highs last month and have just dipped a bit this month. Mm-hmm. So there's a big rush for those kind of companies within Vietnam. I kind of think a reasonably interesting secondary effect. But no, in terms of volatility, it's not something that is obvious quite yet. Maybe that will come through in the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, Vietnam's is interesting also because of the US reaction to Vietnam being in vogue among investors, but also, you know, Chinese production, and there's been a lot written about that, and, you know, Trump calls them the worst abuser internationally of everyone. I think was a bit harsh.
In his delightful way, so very subtle.
but I mean, thinking about countries like Vietnam, how more broadly are emerging markets or developing countries shaping up against the developed world, the historic financial centres in Europe, America, I suppose to an extent, Japan? Are you seeing more money flowing broadly towards emerging markets? And, you know, if you think of emerging markets, it was, you know, is the BRICS, wasn't it? The Brazil, Russia, India, China. How are flows relative between developed and developing world?
Well, it's within EM, with the certainly financial companies, the BRIC nations have been gradually increasing their share of portfolios. But in terms of global funds, EM really hasn't seen a great deal of inflow or just taking any market share, because the US has taken everything. I mean, it's just been this enormous juggernaut and has outperformed everything, and allocations in the US keep on increasing. So the US has been the story over the last 2 years, certainly from an allocation perspective, and just how much that's grown. And global managers are running one of the largest underweights in the US at the moment, and that's, you know, against overweights in Europe. But emerging markets haven't really poked through, and you've seen pockets of it in, you know, China, some of the consumer staples names, some of the financial companies I've mentioned already. But en masse, you know, even things like Brazil, countries like Brazil at the moment, and Russia aren't particularly highly placed in global portfolios. I think there are other companies out there that are slightly more attractive. I mean, whether that will change over time, I don't know. But
time will tell.
You've got to expect the US at some point to change and the, you know, the kind of to give up some of its gains it's made against everyone else in the world.
It's been amazing to talk to you, and I really thank you, Stephen Holden, for staying up so late, and no doubt your children will be waking up very early tomorrow morning. It's been great to have you, and we hope you'll come on the Business Bunker show again. But for now, thanks very much for coming on with me and Gavin Serkin, Ken Lloyd and Acacia, Francois Renier, and keep in touch with us.
Thanks very much for having me, Jules.
Yeah.
And speak soon.
We wish you a good night and a good sleep.
Thanks, Steve.
From all of us. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gavin. Thank you. Bye.
That was Stephen Holden there from Copley FD Fund.
Fund Research.
Thank you.
Copley Fund Research.
Interesting there. Lots of little hot tips, I think, there for the Business Bunker listeners. And he's calling in from New Zealand, obviously a global company. And plenty of opportunity for Kent businesses to work with companies like that. Don't forget, Brexit is not the end. I've got some little ads to play, which I need to do because Paul Andrews will shout at me. So we're just going to have a little ad break and then we'll be back. Later on, in a few minutes, we're going to have a discussion, and then we're going to get Nikuru Balonwi on. She's the founder of African Women on Board, so stay with us.
I'm off to Channel Facilities Management. Oh, didn't I say? I don't work for them. What I mean is, I don't start work without them. Channel Facilities Management is where local businesses go for no-hassle, peace-of-mind commercial cleaning, security, janitorial supplies and facilities management. Operating a safe, green and eco-friendly service with no chemicals used. Channel Facilities Management. Don't start work without them. Just call 0800 612 4415 or visit channelfm.co.uk.
Rift Accounting. Safety in numbers. Riftaccounting.com.
ZC Live, bringing a digital one-day event to Kent with Zoe Cairns. ZC Live. Register for your free place. Visit zcsocialmedia.com. Want more business in Kent? Get 12 months membership for the price of 10 when you join our supplymybusiness.co.uk Kent Business Community today.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
And we've just been speaking to Stephen Holden of Copley Fund Research. Thank you. And I think I feel like it's midnight, actually. We are just back in the studio. We have Francois Rainier of Acacia, based here in Kent and France, working globally with clients, and Ken Lloyd, graphic designer extraordinaire, also working globally and in Kent. And the lovely Gavin Serkin. Tell us a group discussion now. You've got a couple of minutes to talk about what we've just been talking about with Stephen Holden and anything else that springs to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting what Steve was saying about the direction that fund managers are going in, you know, reducing holdings in the UK, which is a bit of a downbeat message. I suppose the only upside of it is that the weakening pound is good for UK PLC. You know, weakening pound means that companies are able to export and, you know, their goods are cheaper abroad. So, you know, if I'm no Brexiteer, but, you know, I do see a silver lining there that, you know, and we've seen that a bit from the UK companies that are export driven. You know, you mentioned some of the more exporting kind of countries. But yeah, what do you think, Francois?
Ken's got his hand up first. Ken Lloyd. And thanks for FaceTiming me then, Ken. It was very appreciative. If you heard a bubble, it was Ken FaceTiming me. He doesn't even know how to do that.
it was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like to have asked him whether he feels the need to leave New Zealand and go to travel and get on the ground with the markets that are of interest to him. New markets and existing markets, how important that is to actually be there for a while to see what's going on.
Hold that thought, because we have to play a song, a little bit of Georgie Fame, because my producer says that we're going to get a call now from Nikiru Bulamwu. So let's have a little bit of Georgie Fame.
And every evening when all my dish work is through, I cut my baby. Yeah, let's go watch it with you. I met some movies, but she don't seem to be gay. And then she asked me, why don't I come to her flat and have some supper and let the evening pass by. By making records, this sounds a groovy high five. I say yeah, yeah, and that's what I say yeah, yeah. My baby loves me, she gets me feeling so fine. But she loves me, she makes me know that she's mine. And when she kisses, I feel the fire get hot. She never misses, she gives it all that she's got. And when she asks me if everything is okay, I got my answer. The only thing I can say, I say yeah, yeah. That's what I say yeah, yeah. We'll play a melody and turn the lights down low so the night can see. We gotta do that, we gotta. Alive in all the world except you and me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty baby, I never need you to throw. It's hard to tell you because I'm trembling so. But pretty baby, I want you all for my own. I'm ready to leave those others alone. No need to ask me if everything is okay. I got my answer. The only thing I can say, I say yeah, yeah.
say. I say, yeah, yeah. That's what I say. Yeah, yeah.
And we're fading out lovely Georgie Fame, even though it kills me, because on the phone we have somebody very important. We go from New Zealand, we're flying now to Lagos with Nikiru Balonwu. She's the founder of African Women on Board. You can tweet them on AWB Africa and use the hashtag BBunker. Also Nikiru Balonwu, you'll find her on the Twitter, on our feed. And we had the pleasure of meeting Nikiru in July at the buzzing, I think it was June actually.
It was the end of June, Gavin, at the Emerging and Frontier Forum.
How time flies. But very, very dynamic forum there that we helped to organise. And Nikiru is forging a path for African women. Hello Nikiru, are you there?
I am here, Jules. Nice to speak to you, and thanks for having me on.
It's so nice. I just remember your gorgeous dress, and I'm coveting it. You know, I'm just, I adored it.
I shall take your measurements and get you one.
Measurements large. tell us, just run us through and tell the listeners on Business Bunker how, why you set up AWB.
I think our goal was just, we were trying to, from starting to get on board, like a whole group of us had been trying to get on corporate boards, mm-hmm. and, you know, we've gotten to really senior positions and just trying to get to the next level and sort of like finding that we needed, you know, allies to get in the room. It was a bit difficult. And then just sort of like talking amongst ourselves and saying what's going on, how do we navigate, and sort of not getting answers.
Yeah.
And so we sort of like decided to sort of speak amongst ourselves and have private conversations around how, you know, different women were navigating their different careers, and then finding that we had very similar issues. But also, I think the bigger picture was just tired of being irrelevant, like just being not in the room, just not counting as being part of any real conversations. And so we're like, we have to do something about this, and there's a time for it.
It's really interesting because when I travel quite frequently to Africa with New Markets Media and Intelligence, I see a different side, because I see African women as being really feisty, strong, dynamic. You know, you wear colour, you wear beautiful, vibrant colours. And so, you know, working in London, I see perhaps British women, English women wearing navy, black, you know, just sort of fading, although they're, you know, highly intelligent and they hold great jobs down. So I see a different side to what you're saying. So just give us an idea of a challenge that you might have faced as a Nigerian businesswoman, Nikiru.
I think that wearing colours is all very well and good, and we do have a lot of amazing colours, but if it were just about that, I just think in terms of, I think the challenges we face are really very similar across the world. I think maybe the main difference would be in terms of the lack of consequences here. And so people do tend to get away with, you know, bad behavior just because there are no real consequences. And so you think about giving a presentation at work, you're pitching to investors, which is like a personal experience of mine.
Yeah.
Pitching to investors and, you know, doing this really what you think is an amazing, and you know, investment pitch. Mm. And then someone sends you a text message and says, oh, why don't we continue this conversation in Cape Town or somewhere ridiculous? Or just sort of like being sort of talked down to. It's really, to be honest, the conversation, I think any woman in the world will sort of like have the same experience.
So what do you say?
Just the back on.
So what you're saying is, Nikiru, that invitation to have continue the conversation in Cape Town is not a serious one. It's over wine and dinner.
Yes, over wine and dinner.
Okay.
over wine and dinner, or being asked, you know, I had a friend who got asked what she needed the money for. I mean, she had a really well-off husband, and why does she want to raise? Mm. Or, you know, having someone being asked why, you know, why she wanted the job because, you know, she had a rich husband. You know, there are the things in terms of the workplace issues that we deal with.
Yeah.
And obviously there's, you know, bigger issues around, but this is just from the work angle.
So you're with AW Africa looking to change this dynamic in some way?
Yes, I think yes. I think that, I mean, 100%, that there is a moment for women right now. There is a moment, I think, maybe before Me Too, maybe, you know, Time's Up, maybe all that created this, you know, conversation around taking women seriously. And there's been, you know, a conversation around empowerment has been elevated, you know, the global consciousness has been elevated. And for me personally, it would be a shame if Africa didn't get involved, if we didn't actually force ourselves into the conversation. You know, the whole idea of being an African woman has usually been all, you know, victims of one disease or the other. Whereas we're saying that...
It's interesting. It's interesting you mention Me Too and Time's Up, because, you know, we think of those as being, you know, having a really strong effect. But, you know, what you're seeing on the ground in Africa is it maybe hasn't had as much impact over there. Is that the case? And if so, why is that?
I mean, agreed. I think it's the case that we haven't quite seen that here. There's been little pockets of, you know, things going on, but nothing has really moved. I think generally we are, I think both men and women have not yet accepted the basic premise that there is benefits in gender diversity. You have comments from, you know, this is the woman's topic, or there it is again, or these women feminists, or this man-hating people, or those sort of conversations. And so we're thinking, from our perspective, that it's really important to engage men as allies while we're on the continent in particular, to actually sort of champion the cause for women, because we have a different history here, and we have to obviously take cognizance of what's going on here and how we can better improve conversations and diversity on the continent.
Which kind of is a very African approach, I think. You know, if you think about post-conflict situations, you know, it is about engaging both sides in narrative and in reconciliation. Is that a wrong parallel, or you know, is that kind of what you're seeing from more of a gender equality perspective?
Yeah, well, I think you're right to point to that African, you know, way of doing things, but I think it's actually a global way of doing things as well. I think that if you think from a communication perspective, when you're having a conversation with someone, you sort of need to talk to them in the way that they're able to understand what you're saying. And I personally have found that even from, you know, when I used to be in boardrooms, that when I spoke to my board, I had to figure out how they wanted to take in the information. And so particularly here, it was important that because this is such a masculine environment, that we, you know, there was no point fighting a battle that we weren't going to win. So why not actually sort of like have, you know, African history has been about supporting women, about empowering women. Why don't we go back to our roots and say men as champions of women, men as, you know, our fathers, our brothers, you know, our defenders, maybe sort of tapping into that and using that as a way to get forward and to get this conversation rolling around how to get Africa to where it needs to be.
Mm. How do you get it from being a conversation to being real action? You know, you're tackling, after all, you know, I can't think of many issues that are bigger than this. You know, you're talking about half the population in Africa. How do you make a difference? You know, what are the steps concretely that Africa Women on Board will be taking through you?
I mean, I think that, you know, we haven't done well so far, and so why not try something new? I think one of the things that we're doing is sort of like very strongly talking about men as allies and, you know, moving it forward and moving the conversation, you know, to the next level. We've, you know, creating women who are not creating, but sort of like
encouraging.
Talking about women who are, you know, doing remarkable stuff. So like we're positioning, we're, you know, saying loudly, these are remarkable people, like creating databases of women who are doing, you know, things in their different industries across the world, not just in Africa, but in the diaspora as well. Partnering with organizations that support women and sort of like championing that forward. Skilling up is also very important in terms of how do you support women entrepreneurs. And people talk about things like financial inclusion as if people would be included if they have no money. So how do you sort of create capacity around for women to actually scale up? How do you tell the world that African women are people who are investable? How do you sort of create opportunities for this woman, and how do you sort of like, you know, you know, talk about what they do on a platform that can actually sort of show the different stories that we are, not just one single story.
This involves governments as well, presumably. I mean, is this about business people thinking, doing the right thing, but it's also presumably about policymakers. You know, just looking at Africa, you know, are there countries where policymakers are kind of getting some of this right, and you know, by the other side of the coin, are there areas where you're really more despairing?
And are they bringing women into the government and the top jobs?
Yeah, I mean, thinking of some country, well, South Africa, for example, you know,
exactly.
which made a big push with the new administration of bringing women into the cabinet.
Mm. As has Rwanda and Ethiopia, actually, there's quite a few countries that are doing that. And Ghana as well seems to be doing quite a lot of stuff around engaging women in policy and politics. I think Nigeria hasn't done as well. I think it's so probably gone back a little, you know, a few steps back. But again, it's, you know, it's sort of like speaking to government and saying, how do you engage women effectively? And also for women ourselves to know that we're an important part of the constitution. We're half of the population and our votes count. So we have to actually for ourselves speak up and then say, listen, we can vote you out. And we, you know, like that we control 50% of the votes in any country. And so imagine what we could do. More than 50% because we can have our kids in the conversation where we're saying this is serious. We need to take us seriously or you're out. I think it's also changing that mindset that's important.
Yeah. Mm. So how can people get involved with what you're doing? What are the next steps? You know, I know you've got a meeting at the United Nations during UNGA, UN General Assembly Week in September in New York. Tell us some of the steps that you're taking as the next way forward for AWB.
So for us, we do have the meeting. We have the AWB at ONGA, which is during the UNGA, as you said. It's about taking this conversation to a global platform so that it's not just this bunch of African women speaking to themselves. It's sort of like we're here. We want to be in this conversation. We want to be taken seriously and even sort of like tapping into diaspora because that's one area that's been neglected. I think we see ourselves as just being Africans, but there's Africans everywhere. Anyone who's of African descent is part of this conversation. And so tapping into that and working together because an Africa that is a good story is actually, you know, good for every Black person. And so that's one area. We've partnered with Wikipedia Nigeria, for example, in terms of creating profiles of notable African women doing remarkable things in their industries. And that is one area we could also support in terms of talking about people who are doing really interesting things and showing what they're adding to the global conversation. Of course, we're able to do events around that, but also particularly one of the things that we're going to be doing is creating a database of notable African women of African descent, almost like a wiki encyclopedia for Black women, where you were able to access information about them. And so for people who are looking for board positions or people to fill out stuff, they will have access to this information, amongst many other things.
Nikhilu, that's amazing to hear all this. And I'm sorry we have to break for the news, but we must come on the show again on the Business Bunker. And we'll continue this conversation soon, I hope. But for now, phoning in from Lagos, a very big thank you from Gavin, myself, Craig, producer, and Ken, and Francois, who are in the studio.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Ciao. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Nikhilu Balumu calling from Lagos. And we're now going to break for the news, and we'll be back in the studio with Ken Lloyd, Francois Renier, and Gavin Serkin, and myself.